might want to set up triggers to your day. So for instance, people who like candles might want to have a candle that they light at the beginning of a working day, which has maybe a certain smell that triggers for them, right, this is the start of the working day. And it's just all of those sensory things that you can do, which just trigger to you, right, I'm starting the day.
You're listening to the Bookkeepers Podcast, sponsored by Xero.
I use Xero's accounting and bookkeeping software to manage my clients' accounts, and I love it. If you haven't tried it yet, head over to Xero.com with an X, and you can either start a free 30-day trial or sign up to Xero's partner program to join their amazing community of forward-thinking accountants and bookkeepers.
Hi, and welcome to the Bookkeepers Podcast. I'm Zoe Whitman. I'm here with Joe Wood, and we're joined today by Lisa Honeyball to talk about interior design and your office space and how we can make it all lovely and more productive and hopefully more profitable. How are you, Lisa? Great to see you.
I'm really good. Thank you for having me on. It's lovely to chat to you. You'll soon find out I can't shut up about design and colour. So
perfect. That's exactly what we want to be talking about. Lisa, do you want to start by telling us a bit about your background and what you do?
Yes. So I started off career-wise in the corporate world, ending up with about 10 years at Microsoft as a program manager. And then due to health reasons and just not ever seeing my house in the daylight, decided that I wanted to go into something more creative, which is what I'd done, wanted to do when I was younger, but kind of been swayed off that path, and ended up retraining and becoming an interior designer. So I've done that since 2011. I have a lovely little studio here in Kent, Honey Interior Design, looking at residential and commercial interiors, works on a mixture of those. But more recently, probably since 2019 and then into the lockdowns, I pivoted, did that old pivot thing, pivoted my business and started working more with other interior designers. So I have a membership for interior designers, which is Interior Design Insiders, and I offer coaching and consultancy and courses for interior designers who are working on their own and just need that little bit of support, particularly on the business side. But it can be, I'm sure as many of your guys will know, your membership for bookkeepers, it can be quite lonely working on your own. So having that community is really important. So come from a community background as well.
Oh, that's amazing. Lisa, you are like, you know, the version of us for interior designers. I love that. Yeah. I love that. And so interior design is one of those things that I like to think I know what it's about, but it feels like it's unreachable for the everyday person. Like, it feels like something that rich people have access to. And I would never think, I mean, I love to have a beautiful home. I'm not very good at it. I don't think I'm very creative. And I always look at other people's homes and think, oh, wow, how do you think of these things? Like, how do you know that that colour and that would look really good, and how you do that with lighting and things like that? But it does feel, for the layperson, it feels like it's something that just really, really rich people have. But you've got a whole community of interior designers working with you. Like, what do and what can interior designers do for, like, anybody?
Yeah, that is an amazing question. And yes, we'll have all of the people in my membership certainly screaming and going, no, it's not just for the rich. So that is one of the main drivers for me in setting up a community and a membership, is that there is an elitism around interior design. It still exists within the industry itself, as well as, you know, the layperson's perception of the industry. But good interior design is for everyone. And there is an interior designer out there who will match your price bracket. So designers these days do everything from e-design schemes, where you're really not paying very much money at all, consultancy. So I know lots of designers who will come out and do 1 hour or 2 hours with you. So for somebody, I saw when you were talking, Joe, that Zoe was shaking her head like, no, you know what you're doing. You have got good design taste. And lots of people do. Most people actually know what they want. They just need that hand-holding, that guidance, and also almost somebody who's an expert to say, actually, crack on 100%. What you're doing is absolutely right. You might want to think about dropping this color in, or in with your space planning, have you thought about just changing these things around? So just tiny little tweaks which can really give you the confidence but help you have a really cohesive scheme and bring it really together. So that's what interior designers can do from that end, from the e-design consultancy, all the way up to if you are tackling a massive project. I don't know if you've ever done it yourself, a renovation or an extension, but there are a million and one decisions to be made. And generally your contractor or your builder just wants to know, what tiles are you having? What color are you painting? And suddenly the decisions come really thick and fast, and it's really overwhelming. So an interior designer has been through that process a lot of times with a lot of different clients. And so they can guide you, they can help you make those decisions up front, so everything is ready, and when the contractor or whichever trade it is asking you for those decisions, the information is there and ready. So it's hopefully an enjoyable process rather than a really stressful process.
Oh, that's amazing. I can remember having a bathroom fitted in my old house, and there was a shower that it was a but I'd li- you know toddlers, and so I was like, I want a bath that's also got like a shower, because we had a separate shower, so it's got a shower thing next to the tap. And I was, and he was like, where do you want that mounted on the wall? I was like, I don't know, just like by the taps. But it is that, it's like you know, sometimes you just need the direction. And for the record, Jo's house is beautiful. It's like, it looks like a next
I'm sure it is.
But one thing that's quite interesting, just talking about that, is that we definitely, I think about clothing particularly, like we do have our own styles. So Jo has a very elegant, modern, minimalist, contemporary style, I suppose. Contemporary is probably the word. Whereas in our house, everything is like white and blue, Scandinavian, I would describe it as, but then we stick bright colour bits and bobs of stuff everywhere. And I think that that's taken, we've been on a journey to learn that. And I think any home we go to will make that mark, and it will end up looking similar. How do you discover though? Because I, you know, speak to people, we see lots of people's Zoom backgrounds when we're on, you know, on calls like this. And sometimes when you are working from home, you're just like shoved in the corner or at the kitchen table or whatever. And if you just feel like you've accumulated stuff over the course of your life and the many homes you've lived in, how do you go back to basics and almost like not, well, reinvent your style or decide what your style is if you've decided that design is something you want to think about in your home and office space going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a lot to be said if you're feeling overwhelmed with your space about stripping it back and just, and quite often I will say to clients, you know, paint it white to start with, or just live in it. You know, if people are moving into a new house and wanting to do the whole thing, if we have time, sometimes it's just, if there's mad colours everywhere when you move into a space, it is stripping it back and just, but not a brilliant white. I would never ever suggest anybody uses brilliant white. It's not a natural colour, and our eyes find it really difficult. It's just very, very bright, but an off-white of some sort, just to strip it back, can be really helpful as a starting point, and then just adding stuff in. One of the trends that, I'm not a big fan of trends, I have to say, but one of the trends that is coming out probably through TikTok in 2024 is something called bookshelf wealth, which is all around having items that you've probably heard before bring you joy, or that you love, or that are something from that you might have like a memory. So that thing of collecting stuff over time that you were referring to is actually a really nice thing to have in your home. And I think that's more about having confidence in what brings you joy and makes you happy. So if it's your office space, you want to walk into your office space, whether it's a dedicated office or whether it's just, you know, a nook that you've created somewhere in the house, and have things that make you feel positive, happy that you're sat at your desk and working, that trigger happy memories. And so that could be an assortment of different things that you have gathered over time. And I think something that can happen if you're on Instagram and you're scrolling through, or you're looking on websites, is that you can see identikit interiors and think, oh, I haven't done that. I don't have the latest trend or the latest color or the color of the year, therefore I'm doing something wrong. And I would encourage people to think more about how you feel in your space. So for you, you know, and what works for you, if it's different from the next person, that's okay. If it's a space that brings you joy and you're happy to be in it, I guess don't feel that peer pressure to then strip it all back and get rid of it. Now, if you want to, yes, absolutely. Look at all of your stuff, put it into three camps. Is it stuff that you're keeping because, you know, you absolutely love it and it brings you joy? Keep that. If not, can you donate it? Can you sell it? Can you upcycle it? Can you do something more meaningful with it? Sometimes we do hold on to things that we don't need to. So you want stuff that serves a purpose, particularly in an office space, because I certainly subscribe to sort of a cluttered physical environment can lead to a very cluttered mind. So potentially just look through that stuff and think, oh, could that be in a different place in the house? Or could I give that to the charity shop? And I think we can hold on to things for a long time because, you know, Auntie Flo gave it to us for Christmas. And so we better keep on to it, but it's not really our style and our taste anymore. But yeah, I'd say let go of stuff if you can.
I think it's really interesting, the whole clutter thing. My mum, who happens to be our member success coordinator, often gives the advice, and I often hear it. You know, if someone's struggling and stuff, she's often like, well, I bet the state of your underwear drawer is a real mess, because sometimes a messy, you know, when if your basics are in a right old state, and, you know, sometimes you have to start with those basics and it makes you feel better, because usually you start off with the day by going to an underwear drawer and get, and if you're, the start of your day is a real mess and everything's old and tatty and everything, you know, sometimes it's about like, what does it mean? The space that you're in and the things and the drawers you're opening up, what is it saying about everything? Because it's subconsciously, we do make it mean something about ourselves. And I know at the beginning of this year, after having a Christmas break, I felt really relaxed. I was really relaxed. And I was like, oh, I've got to get back into like energy mode. And sometimes, you know, you have to move to create energy. And so I just really sorted out my bedroom, sorted out my clothes, sorted out the drawer that was shut, but I knew there was stuff that needed organizing in it. Because I do feel like we keep the knowledge of, or even what's under your bed, all these kind of things, we know it's there. And it's something I've done. We moved into this house 5 years ago, and I have put nothing in the main attic. We've got an attic above our garage, a small, very small attic, and we've made a pact. Nothing is going in the massive attic because it makes me feel bad. And I literally feel like
it's definitely a weight. Yeah. And we did that when we moved house 8 years ago, having cleared out like a garage and the attic of stuff that I hadn't seen for 10 years. And we said the only things that could go into like the garage / attic space was camping stuff, which you don't use all year round, and the Christmas tree and Christmas decorations. Other than that, nothing was going in that space. And we've stuck to it. And actually, it definitely is, you know, I'm not necessarily of the, you know, Marie Kondo, like get rid of everything and that you can't have things around you. And the levels that people find acceptable is different for each person. So it's definitely not about stripping everything out of your way so that we're all living in really sterile spaces, but it's about finding the level that's acceptable and meaningful for you. For some people, you know, when you go around to the house, they'll say, well, sorry, it's such a mess. And you're looking around at the kitchen service thinking, where is this mess that you speak of? And it's just because they've got the toaster out or something like that. And usually they put it away. Whereas for other, you know, so we all have a different tolerance for what constitutes mess for us. So I think it's understanding that our homes and our office spaces are very individual, but 100%, I'm with your mum, like get rid of, you know, tidy up that underwear drawer. It's the same with your office. If you walk in of a morning, and I try and do this every evening as I leave my office, just, you know, tidy up piles of paper, just have organizational systems in place. And you can do that whether you have a dedicated office or whether you just have, and it actually is more important if you are in a dining room or a bedroom or somewhere like that, to have, you know, methods of organization that you can clear down at the end of the day and start afresh in the morning.
Methods of organization, what do you mean by that, Lisa? And can you give us an example? Because I bet some of us need them.
Yes. Yeah. So I think it's just with an office space, although we are very much now on computers, and so a lot of stuff is in the digital realm, you still are going to have things that you need to do the job. So whether that's pieces of paper that you're writing notes down during a meeting, whether it's client files with confidential information, if it, you know, just pen and paper, just the things, the tasks of your everyday job, then organization would be having things that you can store those away in. So that could be filing systems. It could just be pretty boxes and, you know, that can fit any style. So if you've got, you know, paraphernalia, I've got on my desk, you know, like a pen pot, which isn't particularly attractive, but it's, you know, it's something that works for me. So finding those things, I'm in a dedicated office. If I was in the house, and I used to work from the house, you know, from a spare bedroom, then finding whether it's, you know, rattan style boxes, or if you've got a color in your branding that you want to bring into your office space, cardboard boxes and things that you can get from so many different high street stores, which you can just store stuff away in. So having a system of, you know, an in-file and out-file, I'm sure with all of your bookkeepers, they'll know what information actually needs to be under lock and key. So with GDPR and personally identifiable information, just making sure that you have something that can, you know, possibly on wheels, particularly if you aren't in a dedicated office space, something that can kind of do double duty and just be pushed out of the way so that you don't see it the whole time. So that's what I mean by sort of methods of organization, is just finding ways to not just be confronted with a stack of paper and not really know what it is, finding ways to keep that all neat and tidy and, yeah, have that clear mind.
Lots of our bookkeepers maybe don't have an office that they go to, a high street office or, you know, premises, and most probably they're making do with something. And I did that for years here. Lots of our early videos in our courses are of me in my front room or in my dining room, and then we had our garage converted. So now I have a dedicated space. And for me, that's really helped because there's a door, two doors, my back door and then my garage door. And it's like physically I'm leaving. And something I've noticed with my sister for a time, she had her office set up in her bedroom and she was really struggling to sleep. And I know lots of people, I know your husband, Zoe, had the same when he was in COVID times. It was real struggle
because it was for like hours. 20 hours a day in the bedroom during COVID, you know, like that makes sense that it would be impossible to wind down.
Yeah. So how important is it to create a separate space, and how do we create those zones to help, you know, make us productive when we're working, but also allow us to wind down in the evening?
Yeah, so, and it is so tricky, and so many of us have that challenge. And, you know, I feel very privileged to be sat in a garden office or to have a separate space, and I know not everybody can achieve that. There's a few things you need to think about. So one is the kind of things you need to think about when setting up an office, which would cover all the basics, things like power sources, you know, light sources, your Wi-Fi signal, storage. So all of those practicalities, hopefully a view, having a view of the outside is really, really important and can really help you stay fresh and productive during the day. So getting all of those things in place, and they're important because, you know, wherever you're working, you don't want trailing cables and lots of mess and clutter that you then have to kind of unwind at the end of the day in terms of putting everything away again. So thinking about those practicalities is really important. And then if you are in a space which you're having to share, thinking about flexible furniture. So there's a lot out there on the market for small spaces. So whether that's a desk which folds up against the wall and then comes down when you're using it, whether it's having something, if you're in your living room, something like a footstool or a pouf which has storage within it. So it can be part of the household or match your decor, but when you're not using it, you can close it down and it hides all of your paperwork and everything away. So those clever storage solutions which don't look, I want to say, office-y, you know, that can fit with your style and your decor, having that sort of thing is really important. But then I'd also think about having a routine and thinking about all of your senses. So particularly if it's something like a bedroom, you might have a little desk, which is so maybe it's a dressing table, you know, and then it serves as your desk during the day. Again, having those storage items which allow you to make it not feel like an office. So you're not lying in bed and looking at your files and thinking about the work you should be doing. But you might want to set up triggers to your day. So for instance, people who like candles might want to have a candle that they light at the beginning of a working day, which has maybe a certain smell that triggers for them, right, this is the start of the working day. And it's just all of those sensory things that you can do which just trigger to you, right, I'm starting the day. I mean, my mum always used to say, we talked about mum's advice here, but my mum always used to say to me, get dressed for the day, even if you're not going on camera, and even if you're, you know, just hanging out, if you're in your gym gear, be honest with yourself. Do you actually feel as professional and as at work as you would if you, you know, put some clothes on which were more representative of, you know, I always think, what would I do if a client phoned and said, can I just quickly get onto like a WhatsApp with you? I need to show you a space. Would I feel comfortable with them seeing me on camera? Now that is different for different people, but I think giving yourself those cues within that space so that you can start and finish the day and draw a boundary are really, really important. I mean, it's tricky. There's no getting around it. If you're having to use a bedroom space, then there's no kind of magic solution. The more you can do to kind of close that off, put a screen around it, make it feel as little office-like as possible, get rid of all the trailing wires and make sure all that sort of techie side of things isn't like in your eye line, the better. But it's tricky. There's no perfect solution. It's hard if you don't have a dedicated space.
No, I remember like working in co-working spaces and being allowed, you know, those IKEA boxy shelves, having one of those. In fact, I have them now, having one of those boxes and trying to just have one. And then being able to, you were talking about sort of having hygienic looking spaces and it was like that. You just found a desk, sat down, that was your stuff. Yeah. And then you put it away at the end of the day. And I think, because when we're at home, we tend to sort of expand, don't we? But if we can just try and bring things together in one place at the end of the day, even if you're in your office space, just to like clear your desk and know you finished the day.
Absolutely. And if you have things, like if you use a pin board, you know, get something which has a picture on one side and the pin board on the other that you can just reverse at the end of the day. You don't want to be looking at like a pin board with like your massive to-do list or must phone this client or like your revenue targets or whatever it is when you're lying in bed. If you can, you know, come up with something that you just switch around at the end of the day and it's a really a relaxing landscape picture or whatever, you know, floats your boat. Just little things like that. Think about, you know, then they're not, you know, expensive hacks or things that take a lot of effort. Just think about, what is it, you know, for any of your members, if they're in their space, be it the dining room, a spare bedroom, wherever, and they're thinking, I'm stressed because I can see X. Just think really laterally, you know, just think about, well, how could I not see X without actually physically removing the whole thing from the room? What could I do that would be a clever solution so that I'm not looking at that? How can I hide it?
Lovely. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it, when you start thinking about, so I think a lot of the time, and you said something about looking out at views, a lot of the time we think about what people are looking, especially if we're on camera a lot and on Zoom and Teams and all of that a lot, you think, well, what can people see? But actually it's really important about what you're looking at as well, because that's going to really impact your day. And it's funny you should say that. So I have this little pulse oil, and I have candles around, and I've got a lovely reed diffuser. And whenever I walk into my office in the morning, I'll go, oh, it makes me feel happy. The smell's really happy. But me and my husband share this space. So I've got my lovely pink wallpaper, which I absolutely love. But he was, funny enough, it's not his colour. So on his wall, he's got big posters of Queens of the Stone Age rock band things, right? Now, I look at that and that makes me smile, because it's such a different view to what people think. They think I'm in this pink bubble here.
Yeah.
But it was really important for him that his, you know, what people saw of him was reflective of him. But yeah, we both look out into the garden and both look out onto, we made sure that we had like double doors with lots of lighting, because I know natural light is so important. I didn't want to be in a box. Didn't want to be in a box all day. So how do we, if we haven't actually, I mean, it's north facing, but we made a very big window. How do people, and how important is natural light in a room, and how do you how do you maximize things to make it more light in the day to help you out?
Yeah, so light is really important. I mean, we know with our, you know, circadian rhythms that's, you know, and the production of different hormones, that we need that light to have us the most productive. So if we're talking about people being productive in their office spaces, which is going to help them have successful businesses, then it is really important. If you've got windows, fantastic. If you've got that view out to nature, that's a really great connection. If you can't connect to nature, having plants, I can see behind Zoe, there's loads of plants in there, having plants in your environment is really good, not only because when we see them, do we feel calmer, do we feel more productive as a result of that, because we feel relaxed, we're in a right state of mind, but also they're doing a lot of great work in terms of the atmosphere and soaking up all of the nasties. So lots of building materials are off gas for a really long time. Things like MDF have formaldehyde and stuff in them, real nasties, and so they can help with the environment and also all of the stuff that comes off of our computers and our screen. So they just generate a nicer environment. Great to have plants around. But in terms of light, think about how many different sources you can put into a space. So I've currently got it's a really dull day here, it's really raining. I've got quite a bright overhead light on, which is quite a cool white. So the nearer you get to I don't want to get into too much technical detail, but light is measured in kelvins in terms of light bulbs. So you've probably seen there's been industrial trends these days. You go somewhere and they have quite orangey yellow light bulbs, and that's the ambience they're creating. That's great if you're moving into the evening, and I would suggest, and I have a lamp on my desk and some wall lights actually, which are nearer that sort of hue. So if I'm having to work in the evening, if it's nearer sort of 6, 7, 8 o'clock, I put that lighting on, because I don't want my brain to be, yes, I'm working, usually doing admin stuff, but I don't want it to be too fired up, because otherwise you won't sleep at night and then the cycle continues. But during the day, you want lights which are nearer sort of 2,700, 3,000 Kelvin. It's just it's a cool white LED as opposed to a warm light LED. So just having those options, thinking about the bulbs that you're using, I definitely advise having something on your desk, because quite often our lights are overhead and so they're casting on us, and so you can be in a pool of darkness. But again, everybody's very different in terms of what they need to keep them in an environment which is well lit. So some people who suffer from migraines will really struggle with overhead lights and too much bright light. So again, there is an element of knowing yourself. So natural light the best. Then if you can have lights around you which are on the cooler side, because that keeps us awake and task focused. But then think about, as you're heading towards evening, if you are doing a night shift, if you like, try not to wake yourself up too much by having more ambient yellow sort of toned light in your office space, so that you can still get a bit of work done, but not be all jazzed up and not able to sleep.
That's really interesting, because we have a ongoing debate in our house about lighting. My husband always wants the yellow tones of light. The kids come down into the lounge and they turn them on, they're white, and it's like 5 a.m. because they're kids, and it's like, oh my gosh, I can't see anything. But I actually can't see well if it's dark, so like, I find it really hard to get dressed and, you know, in the like yellow light. So yeah, it's really interesting as well, just from a, can you do the things you need to do with the lighting you've got?
Exactly. You really have to make sure that it works for you. So, and we are all very individual with that. We know that our eyes start aging from about the age of 30. We start seeing less light. We can see, we haven't really touched on color. Color is a massive thing, but we start seeing less color. So as you age from about 30 onwards, your color and contrast starts to dip down. So you can't see that contrast in color so well. So we're not all seeing the same color. and our, how we take in light is very different as well. People who suffer from depression or seasonally affected disease need a lot more bright light, especially in the UK in the months that we're in at the minute, sort of December, January, February, it can be really difficult. And just on an individual level, I kind of have the opposite struggle in my household, Zoe. My husband likes really bright light, and I just constantly walking around thinking, can we just dim that a bit? There's definitely a balance. You know, you don't want it so dark that you're sort of stubbing your toe and falling over. But for me, sometimes he has the lights on so bright that I just feel like I'm on high alert, and it's not restful at all. So it is finding a bit of a compromise there.
I love that we're talking about this because we have the same battle as well, but not with, it's about which way the blinds go, because one is a bit darker and I like the lighter and he likes it dark. And every time we walk in a room, we change it to what we want it to be. So we're constantly changing it. So I love how everybody, and then my daughters as well, like they are so picky about the Christmas tree lights and whether it's like the yellow or the white, the icy, they were all very much, they wanted the yellow lights. And if some of the lights don't match, then they're like, well, we can't use them. Like, you know, and I was like, back in the 80s, it was all multicolored, didn't matter. Yeah. But now it has to be aesthetically pleasing. And it has to match. But I love that we all have marriages and light is coming into that. That's hilarious. I've never thought of that. Yeah. I thought I was the only one that was.
No, it's your environment and how you live in. You'll find it with everything. You know, interior design can often be seen as like the fluffiness, the plumping of the cushions, all the frills at the end. But actually, it's very much about the design side, the functionality, the lighting levels, the views that you can see, the placement of furniture, all of that stuff which we take in all the time. You know, the colors that we use, you know, there's stuff going on subconsciously the whole time in terms of our environment. I mean, something, you know, even looking at Zoe, you have your back to a door there. A lot of people would struggle having that layout in their office because we do suffer as human beings from hypervigilance. So having a door behind us, so if you're the sort of person when you go to a cafe or a restaurant with friends and you're going to sit down, you quickly, you know, go to the position of strength, which is with your back to a wall because you can see out, and that's a really common thing, and you don't want to be the person who sat on a chair and kind of floating in the middle of the cafe with people coming around you. So people can sometimes apply that to their office spaces as well. You might not realize what's making you potentially a bit edgy, but for a lot of people, having a door behind them, and you can't always decide, it could just
I'm in a very narrow room that would have been the garage when it was converted, not by us, and a big window is here, and I've tried sitting everywhere, haven't I, Joe, over time, but I need the light, so this is how I've ended up here. But I know what you mean. I do have a mirror.
It's a compromise, yeah.
I've got a rear view mirror, so I can
see that. That, yeah.
Usually you can see him coming in.
But it's sometimes we don't have the choice. And I think that's it. With interior design, we're always designing with what we've got. You know, we don't have £1 million as interior designers on every project to sort of make it perfect from scratch. You know, many of us will be working with existing layouts, existing furniture, and just trying to bring something cohesively together. And like with your room, you know, you could spend money and move that door, but you know, it's always a way off, you know, weighing stuff up and thinking, actually no, I'll just manage. And I love your rear view mirror is a great solution to that.
Can we ask you a bit about color? You were saying we were thinking about the psychology of color. I mean, obviously, well, I don't know if it's obvious, I'm just thinking, as bookkeepers and accountants, we've thought about colour in our branding and our websites and, you know, things we put out online. You might even have colours you prefer. I was going to say, we usually wear pink, but neither of us are wearing pink today. But, you'll see us in pink because it ties in with everything we do at 6FB. But naturally, you're drawn to different things. Do we need to think about the colours we're using in our office? Does that make a difference on our behaviour or how we succeed in business?
Yeah, it certainly can. I mean, colour psychology is a huge topic. I mean, much bigger than we've got time to dig into now. So there are lots of different layers to colour psychology. So we know that there are kind of guidelines in terms of overall, we can expect all human beings to react in a certain way to certain colour groups. So red will potentially elicit, you know, a more competitive edge. It can be seen as quite an aggressive colour. There's lots of passion associated with it. So we have different ways that we associate different colours, different understandings. But even within each colour group, there are so many variations. So red is not just red, you know, and actually pink is red, it's just light red. So we go all the way through the spectrum, and with each color that is the case. With every color there are negative traits as well as positive traits. So, you know, there's always two sides to things. You know, red can give you energy and that can be a really positive thing, but too much and it's aggressive and can be overpowering and overwhelming. So how do you balance that? So it's interesting to understand why people have chosen the brand colors that they've chosen and how that reflects on their business. But then thinking about how they bring that into their office space and into their work environment, I think it's great to introduce it in some ways, but it really depends on those colors. And having something in a teeny tiny logo on your website or potentially on some of your literature is quite different to painting your whole room in those colors, depending on the colors that you've chosen for your brand. So I think it can be great as a backdrop to have something so that if you are talking to clients a lot, there's that visual cue of, oh yes, I'm talking to that brand, and therefore you have that connection with them. But just be wary of, you know, how much color you are using. If you've got potentially really bright and zesty colors, which can be a bit overwhelming. Blue is universally the world's favorite color, but it's also a really fantastic color for an office space in terms of it aids concentration. It can help really calm our brains. So it's a really great color from that perspective. If you're in a smaller space, if you're using light blues, they can open up a space and make it feel, because we associate blue with big open spaces like the sea and the sky, it can link us to that. Darker blues, so sort of navies, are very much seen as trustworthy. And so these are just general cues that we have with colours. And you always have to layer on your personal interaction with colour, I guess. So your life and how you've lived and the experiences that you've had colour kind of get layered onto that. If you had a really, really happy childhood and you had a green bedroom, then you forever potentially will associate that shade of green with joyfulness and playfulness and those happy childhood times. So we do start attaching our own emotions and our own feelings on top of kind of the cultural influences and the general color psychology guidelines that are out there. So it's a really complex area, I guess, but it's so important, it's fundamental. We are influenced by color every second of the day. If you go into a supermarket shop, you just have to look at the branding and the color that's being used on anything, and they will have tapped and they'll have paid millions and tapped into color psychology. So marketers have known this for a long time, that we really do respond on a really basic level to color. And we know that there are, you know, color primaries as well, so psychological primary colors. So we know red, for instance, actually has a physiological impact on us. So it can raise our heart rate. That's why it's quite often used for sports teams, because, you know, not only do we see it as like an energized color, but it physically has an impact on us. Yellow is very much associated with our brains and the nervous system. So yellow can be a really joyful, uplifting color, but its negative trait is that it can make us feel nervous and anxious. Too much of the wrong yellow can leave us feeling really unsettled. In nature, yellow, particularly when combined with black, is a warning sign. We use it on, you know, chemical warning signs as well. And there's a reason that that kind of luminous yellow, especially with black, can cause a bit of vibration for us. So on the one side, you know, that lovely buttercup yellow or golden yellows can be really calming and lovely, but they can also be a bit unsettling and make us feel anxious. You know, and you start looking at our lexicon and how language comes into color and language come together. So, you know, things like yellow belly or, you know, cowardy custard, it's yellow that they're associated with. If you think, you know, she was, you know, red with anger, you know, seeing red, you know, all of those things. If you start to think about how they come into our culture, there's usually reasons which are underpinned by colour psychology. So yeah, I did say don't get me started on colour. It's really complex. But think about it. Think about how you feel with those colours. You're the one that's spending the most time in that space. If you feel like you're drained at the end of a day and you've got just too much going on, it could be because you've got too much bright colour around you, which can really sap your energy. For other people, they need that colour to really bring them to life and to give them energy. And again, it can be very individual. How much colour is good for one person versus, you know, we have maximalists and people who are real colour lovers, and the spaces that they live in look amazing. But for you, you might think, oh no, it's just too much, it's too overwhelming. And on the flip of that, people who like calm, more neutral spaces and find that a really productive environment, for those people who love colour, they're just like, oh, I just couldn't work in that space. It's too flat for me. I need some energy and I need something to bring me alive. So it's a tricky one to answer. It's about finding what works for you.
Wow. That's so impressive. You can talk that long about colour. I'm like,
oh no. I'm sorry, you were probably like, one quick last question.
No, it's really interesting. And you know, I think I was thinking about all the yellow, and like I chose yellow for a brand, and you know, all of that, like alarm and alert, the yellow and black. I thought, oh my gosh, it never even crossed my mind. And it just shows why we need to really think about it, and you know, learn a bit. I think we've all got a lot of research to do, and I think we could speak to you a lot, Lisa, and learn so much from you. I know we're short of time though, so I'm going to ask Lisa, how can people connect with you and find out more about what you do?
Okay, so if you want to find out more about interior design, probably the best place to head, if you're on Instagram, is at Interior Design Insiders, which is my membership. But if you're looking at working with an interior designer, you can message me there and I can connect you with somebody who's local to you, because our membership does cover the country. So it's a good place to start. I do also talk about hints and tips on interior design. If you're not on Instagram, then it's the same. You've popped up on the screen there, www.interiordesigninsiders.com. And if you are a bookkeeper and you have interior design clients and they want to get into a membership or want that community, then send them in my direction as well. We're all about getting interior design out to everyone and making it feel less elite, connecting through community courses, consultancy. So yeah, if you have those clients, send them in my direction as well.
Oh, lovely. Thank you so much, Lisa. Really enjoyed speaking to you. And I hope we can do this again another time, and maybe we can deep dive on colour.
Yeah, I think that would be it. One on branding and colour. We could, as I said to you, get me started and you can't shut me up. But hopefully it's given people enough information to go away and have a think about their office spaces and be heaps more productive.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for having me on. Bye.
See you next time. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for the Bookkeepers podcast. Why not join us in the Six Figure Bookkeepers Club at sixfigurebookkeeper.club, or visit our website, sixfigurebookkeeper.com.